Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, October 9th, 2016. This is episode 1,330. And by the way, if you like this show or any of the other shows we do on the Twit Network, don't forget, Twit's now on the Amazon Echo Flash Briefing. So go into your Alexa app and make sure you check the Flash Briefing. You might have to scroll down a little bit, but there you'll find Twit. And each and every day, we've got new content, the latest tech news, stories from Jason Howell, Megan Maroney, and Tech News Today, and of course, me too. Go to the settings in the Alexa app, search for Twit, and subscribe. It's a great way to start your day. And now, without further commercial interruption, well, maybe a little bit, it's time for The Tech Guy. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is literally brought to you by Sonic, Twit's 10 gigabit fiber internet service provider. Join Sonic's internet revolution as they bring fast, affordable internet, phone, and TV to homes and businesses all over California for a lot less than you might think. Visit sonic.com/twit to sign up for service and receive your first month free. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at QuickenLoans.com/TechEye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time for computers, the internet. We'll talk about home theater a little bit. Of course, our photo guy, Chris Marquardt, will stop by in about an hour and a half, talk about digital photography. I spend a lot of time, as always, talking about smartphones exploding and otherwise. I talk about smart watches, virtual reality, anything with a chip in it, any technology, that's what we're here for. And if you want to join the conversation, I would love to hear from you. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. Easy to remember. That's the mnemonic version. 8888-ASK-LEO. If you're a number person, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. You can use Skype and still reach us. It's funny, when we first started doing the show, I've actually been doing this show since 1991, I think. But when I first became the Tech Guy, I was dubbed, anointed the Tech Guy in 2004. We got the number 8888-ASK-LEO, and I would say that number, and then people would say, well, I have a BlackBerry, and the BlackBerry doesn't have the letters on the numeric keypad. And I thought, oh, you need to tell me numbers. I don't know what 8888-ASK-LEO is. So, okay. Now no one has I guess some people still have BlackBerries, but BlackBerry this week went out of the hardware business. It's kind of sad. Never forget getting my first BlackBerry. It wasn't a phone. The first BlackBerry I had was that pager thing. Remember that big pager that had a keyboard on it? And I think a couple or three or maybe even four lines of 40 characters each. That was I'll tell you how I can date it. I got it when the Xbox came out. The original Xbox came out. So that would have been probably 2001 or 2000. And the reason I remember that is I went up to Seattle for the Xbox unveiling. And I had just gotten my new BlackBerry pager. And I spent the whole time typing. There was no Twitter. It was just your email. But man, that was cool. And the little thumb wheel. And then, of course, BlackBerry made some very popular phones. And I loved it. In fact, my last phone before the iPhone came out was a BlackBerry Curve. Loved that phone. Then the iPhone arrived in 2007. And, well, I think the folks at BlackBerry just didn't understand what that meant. Which isn't a knock on them. No one did, right? The folks at Microsoft didn't. No one did. Nobody thought, I remember Steve Ballmer saying, well, that iPhone, that's not going anywhere. CEO of Microsoft, it's too expensive. Who would want that? They weren't worried. And that lack of concern at BlackBerry and at Microsoft just was enough to throw them off their game for a couple of years to let them sit back and not worry. And then, by 2009 or 2008, when it started to become clear this was the future of cell phones, they kind of leapt into action. But it was just a little too late. Microsoft came out with its Windows Phone a few years later. They had Windows phones, but the kind of the modern style new Windows Phone. But 3 years was too late. Apple already owned it. BlackBerry, for a long time, poo-pooed it. No, we're secure with the choice of businesses everywhere. And they were in government, too. Remember interviewing the chairman of the FCC, William Powell. This would have been 2004, I think. Pre-iPhone. He had his BlackBerry phone, so did I. He lived on that thing. I said, Chairman Powell, you seem to really like that BlackBerry. I said, well, how do you use it? I think we spent the day with him interviewing him and stuff. He said, well, it's for email triage. And I think this was a very good use of it. You wouldn't really want to write emails too much on it. But what you could do is go through your emails, delete the ones you didn't need, forward the ones that your deputies should handle. And then when you got back to the office, you had an inbox that was all tidied up and ready to go with the stuff you needed to handle. So how many BlackBerries did Hillary Clinton have? What is it, 13? It was something like that, and 9 of them were lost. They were very popular in government. Of course, the iPhone now is completely owns the space. And in fact, Google, which was had bought a little company called Android, a little operating system, and was going to put out its own smartphone. When they saw the iPhone, at least Google, and this may be why, maybe this is the tail of the tape, the reason why Google is still in the game when everybody else isn't. Google, when they saw the first iPhone in 2007, said, whoa, back to the drawing board. And they scrapped everything they'd done and they went back. And it was a year later when they finally came out with their first Android phone. But it was a big difference from the one they had been designing because they saw what Apple did and said, oy. Okay, we get it. They got it. We get it. And that's the difference between 1 year later than Apple and 3 years later than Apple. Google got an Android phone out. Not a very good one. I have it still, the G1. It was terrible. Had a BlackBerry-style slide-out keyboard. But they got in the act. And they got in the reason you want to get in the act is because you want to start getting it out to consumers as quickly as possible and see how they react, see what they like, what they don't like, and start refining and evolving. And both Apple and Google did a really good job, I think, of listening and saying, okay, we're going to get it better and better, to the point now where there's not much more you can do. As phones now come out, the new Google phone was announced this week. Yeah, the Pixel, it's a lot like any other phone. It's a glass tablet. On-screen keyboard, they've kind of figured it out at this point. But, boy, those first few years from 2007 to maybe, 2010, 2011, there was massive, very quick evolution. And Google got in on the game. Microsoft didn't. BlackBerry didn't. Bye-bye, BlackBerry. Microsoft just hanging on by a thread. They're pretty much out of the phone business. It's down to Android and iOS. It really is. The reason I mention that, among other things, besides the passing of BlackBerry, bye-bye, sorry, sad. Their company's not gone, by the way. They have software. They have very good software. They bought wisely a few years ago a operating system called QNX, which is widely used in cars and other kind of what they call embedded systems, where you don't really see the computer, but it's there. The reason I mention it, though, is I've been thinking a little bit about virtual reality. Sony's PlayStation VR comes out this week. You'll be able to finally buy that. If you have a PlayStation 4, you can just buy the headset and the Move controllers and a camera and you're set. It will be probably the easiest way for people to get into virtual reality gaming because if you've already got a PS4, you're kind of ready to go. But even, and I've played with them all now. I've played, of course, with the low-end, the Gear VR, the Google Cardboard, with the kind of the PlayStation VR, the kind of medium range, the higher end Oculus Rift, and of course the highest end HTC Vive. I've owned all of those, and while it's at first, the first time you put on the visor, you get all excited, maybe kind of the way we were excited about the iPhone when it first came out. But then quickly you go, that was neat, and I'm done. And maybe you put it on every once in a while, but it's kind of, you know, I get it, but it's not compelling. It's not going to change my life. And that's where VR is. But I think the tale is important here. The story, the moral of the story with the iPhone is important here. You got to get in the game. You got to get a product out, and then you got to evolve. And who knows, maybe in 5 years, we'll see something kind of miraculous with VR. I think we got a ways to go. And my advice, by the way, if you're wondering, should I run out and get a PlayStation VR? Well, if you already have a PS4, it's a few $100. Maybe. It's fun to play those games. And the PlayStation VR, you play sitting down pretty much. It's not, so you don't, it's a pretty easy experience on the stomach. But we got a ways to go. We got a ways to go. Gaming is not, it's not all it needs to be yet. Maybe wait a little bit. You know, you don't always have to be the first on the block. I do. That's my job. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to take the phone calls in just a minute. Get those calls coming in. 8888 Ask Leo. Kim Schaffer's answering the phones, and we'll go to the phones right after this. The iMac died. Actually, it's an interesting story. The iMac is a 2012 iMac, and apparently it's a Fusion drive, one of those 3-terabyte Fusion drives, and Apple's done a recall on the hard drive in it. So we'll get that hard drive fixed. Meanwhile, I'm using a laptop, the Linux laptop in here. And actually, I brought in my free BSD box. I'll probably be using that instead of the iMac anyways. I just want to celebrate another year of Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to join us, join the conversation.
Yeah, so...
Kim Schaffer. Kim Schaffer. Hey, I'm talking to you, Kim. I'm talking to you. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
This is bad because I control Kim's microphone, and so I can just turn it on at any time. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump you like that. I apologize.
It's okay. Just dealing with callers.
Yeah, no. That's your, you know what? That's your job, not dealing with Leo. Leo's second. Your job is taking the phone calls. That's why I'm going to you right now, because...
Because we have callers.
We have callers.
Yes.
And I need to answer calls because people probably don't want me just talking for 3 hours.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly it.
Yeah. Thank you for your honesty.
Anyway,
yeah.
Neil in Phoenix has a new iPhone 7.
Oh,
and
how exciting.
So do you. So maybe you can help him.
Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Everybody should call Kim. 8888 Ask Leo. She's got a pumpkin. It's Halloween. Is that? I came back. I was gone for 2 weeks, and all of a sudden, everything's pumpkin spice everywhere.
Oh. Yeah.
Everything.
My lip gloss is probably pumpkin spice.
Everything is pumpkin spice. All right, go back to work. I'm sorry I interrupted. Neil in Phoenix, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Neil.
Good morning, Leo. Welcome back from your trip. I saw some great pictures yesterday from that, and it looks like you had a great time, I hope.
Had a wonderful time. We went on a Baltic cruise, so we got to see, we spent 3 days in Russia. It was really fun. Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad to be back, though. You know, it's... Towards the end of a vacation, this almost always happens, I start actually doing the radio show, and my poor wife really doesn't. I go, Lisa, cabin 971, what's your problem? It's not good. So I'm glad to be back. What can I do for you?
Okay. Well, we've talked before, and I actually did, I kind of went against your, I usually take your advice.
But you went against my advice?
But here's what you said to me, to hold on to the S6S Plus a while back. But I have the Leo bug, I guess, if you will, and that is I have to always get the latest and greatest. So I went ahead and upgraded. I have that plan where I can swap them out.
Oh, well, you should do it then. That's why you buy that plan, so you can have a new iPhone every year. Right. I should just reiterate my general advice. I've been using the iPhone 7, and I really like it. I think they did a good job. It's not so much better than the 6S. That if anyone should feel like, oh, I got to get it. Every other year is fair on a phone. And so then the iPhone 8, if you're still using a 6S, wait for the iPhone 8. If you have an older phone, the iPhone 7 is a worthy upgrade. So what do you think?
Well, so far, I've had it. I only got it on Wednesday, actually. So I only just had a few days to play with it, got it set up. I moved the 6S. I upgraded from the 6S Plus and dropped it in there. That went well.
My advice is hook it up to a computer with iTunes back up the old phone. Make sure you check the box that says encrypt this backup, because then it will store your Wi-Fi passwords and email logins, things like that, so you don't have to re-enter all of those. So do an encrypted backup, and then you can restore that to the new phone, and that makes it a lot easier to set up. You'll still have to download all of your apps, and some of your app data you'll have to re-download, Kindle books, things like that. But otherwise, it's a pretty painless process.
Actually, I noticed that maybe I'm not sure if it worked this way normally, but when I did the upgrade, I did it exactly as you described, but it actually was downloading all the apps itself. I actually downloaded all the apps that had been on the phone.
Yeah, it downloads them, but it doesn't take it from the backup, I guess is what I'm saying. So you've backed up the phone. You know, you could just restore the phone exactly as is, but instead, and I think Apple's doing this because they want to give you fresh apps. Instead, it just makes a note of all the apps you've got installed and re-downloads them from the store. Right? That was your experience, right? Isn't that what happened to you?
Exactly. It worked perfectly. And it was, I had to re-enter a few passwords on a few of the apps. Other than that, it worked
right.
Great.
And it just means
that was fairly painless.
You want to do the upgrade where you're on a high-speed connection so that you can get all those apps as quickly as possible.
Right.
Yeah.
But this brings to my question then, is now that I have the phone, you know, I know the main feature I would think of the new phone probably is the camera.
I brought this phone on the trip. You said you saw some pictures. I brought a very, very good Leica camera and this phone. And, you know, I think the phone competes well. I'm very happy with many of the pictures I got from the phone.
Right. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
So my point would be, I have the camera, I mean, the phone, and I have also Camera Plus and Pro Cam that I have had for years, although I haven't really had a lot of a lot of knowledge of how to use those apps. That's kind of what I was calling about, is what should I do, if you will, to get the best use out of this excellent camera? Do I need one of these apps, and how can I learn?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think you do. I think the Apple camera app is really the best app. Third-party app developers have to rewrite their software to take advantage of the iPhone 7's features. For instance, Instagram and some other apps don't yet know about the zoom, the switch from the short lens to the long lens. And of course, camera app from Apple does, but some of the third-party apps have to be updated. And I would bet Apple puts all of its magic mojo into the camera app. Most of it's in what we call an API, that is an interface that other apps can use, but I bet not all of it. For instance, when 10.2 comes out, the next version of iOS in the next 30 days or so, you're going to get a new portrait mode, which is going to be unique to Apple. And I've played with that a little bit. It's kind of cool. It uses both lenses to create a DSLR-style foreground and background in your image, foreground in crisp focus, great for portraits of people, and the background in kind of creamy, blurry focus. And it does that with using the dual lenses. And to my knowledge, no third-party app yet supports that. And I don't know if there'll be an API for it. I don't know if Apple will make that accessible to other apps. We'll have to wait and see. So use the camera. Use the Apple camera app. I don't think you need a bunch of Here's the one app you might want to get. And it's not updated, as far as I know, not yet updated for the new phone. It's Microsoft's Pix, P-I-X app. Not because it's a better camera app. I think there's nothing better than the iPhone. But it does something unusual. The whole time it's open, it's taking pictures. And then it picks the best one. It's kind of an automatic burst mode. And so there are apps like Hipstamatic and the Bitcam app, which do something very, very different than a regular camera app. But I don't see the need for ProCam or Camera Plus. And by the way, Camera Plus is written by a good friend. I love Lisa Bettany, who helped design that, and she's made a lot of money on it. But those days have gone. I think Apple's camera apps are the best. So I don't think you need an app just to do regular camera stuff anymore.
Well, great. Well, thanks so much for taking the call. I appreciate that information.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Next door.
So you're right. The camera's the biggest change. How do you like the new home button? It doesn't actually move. It just kind of gives you a little haptic. Does that bother you?
It's interesting. No, it doesn't bother me at all.
I got used to it real quick.
I don't see a problem with that. And I don't miss the headphone jack too much. Now, I don't have but one pair of wired, I have a set of QC25 headphones, and I have the earbuds that came with it. So I don't have a big problem with the lack of the camera. 3.5-millimeter jack. But other than that, you know.
Yeah, and I guess we'll all get used to that. I'm still thinking Apple made, you know, a kind of a self-serving move. They're the number one Bluetooth headphone manufacturer in the world because they own Beats. And I have to think that there's a little bit. It's not courage that made them get rid of the headphone jack. It's greed. But having said that, it's not a big deal. You're right. And I bought already three more adapters, so I'm not going to run out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
Thank you.
Phil, you're not going to see Phil Schiller get up on stage and describe. We've taken out the headphone jack, and one word describes it: greed. You're not going to hear him say that. But I have to think. And I don't want to use Bluetooth, you know. I like wired headphones. I use the Edemotics. So, yeah, if you only use one set of headphones, you just put the adapter. Comes with the new phone. You put it on. You leave it on. Problem is I use a variety of different headphones all the time, so. So what did iMore say? I saw the Scooter X. I didn't see that link. I mean, I didn't click on the link because I just launched the chat room. But did they recommend, do they think other camera apps are better? I think you're going to be, look at the way Apple works is they keep the best stuff for themselves. They're going to keep all of the best camera interface stuff secret. They're going to publish an API that third-party developers can use, but it will never be the complete, you can do everything we can do API, in my opinion. Apple's going to always hold back, well, like Portrait. That I don't think that's in the API. I'm a big fan of Snapseed. Yeah. Editing is a different matter, yeah.
Yeah, they're porting it over to
Windows. Oh, nice. Yeah, I mean, I should probably qualify that. Editing, there's lots of, you probably should have a dozen apps for that, because there's all sorts of great stuff. Nice. I've been using Google's free Snapseed, and that's pretty darn good. Pretty darn good. But there's lots of little specialty apps out there that are worthwhile. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Richard in Los Angeles. Hi, Richard.
Hi. How you doing, Leo?
I am well. How are you?
Good. I'm well. I'm glad to have you back. Your trip sounded wonderful.
I like vacations, but the best part about vacations is coming home sometimes. You really appreciate your country and your town and your home and your bed a little bit more for having been away, right?
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Question, please. I have a Samsung phone, and I have a TuneIn Pro to download BBC programs.
Yeah, I love TuneIn Radio. I love it.
Well, when I try to play the program on my car's entertainment system, it comes up as an MP4.
Yeah.
And the system doesn't handle that. Is there anything?
That's a video for some reason. It shouldn't be an MP4.
I realize. I've talked to the Mazda people, and they explain what you just said. I don't understand why it's a video. It's definitely a radio program. It's on BBC radio station.
So you can save audio as an MP4. It just, you don't have any video content.
Well, but the car won't play it.
Yeah, of course not. So what you're going to have to do is somehow get the file on a computer and re-encode it, I think. So you have TuneIn. Let me get this straight. You're downloading using TuneIn onto your phone.
Right.
And then your phone is connected directly to your car or via Bluetooth?
It's connected directly to the car.
Yeah, so there's the problem. So when you do that, the car now sees the phone as a hard drive or a thumb drive. It's playing directly from the drive. If you were, and I think the way TuneIn expects you to use it, if you were playing back via a Bluetooth connection to your car, the phone would be doing the decoding. And the phone can handle it, obviously, because you can listen to it on your phone, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very easily.
So that's what's going on. You don't have the Bluetooth capability in your car? Or?
Oh, yes, I do. No, that's not a problem. I was doing it using a USB connection.
Right. So that's one way to fix it is to use Bluetooth instead and have TuneIn decoded on the phone and play it back to your car.
Ah, okay. That should solve the problem.
Yeah. The physical connection, when you do that, then the car just says, oh, I'll handle everything. Just give me the data file. And it can't.
Right.
So your choice is to either get the data file, re-encode it as an MP3, and then give it to the car, or better yet. And by the way, there's probably an Android app out there that will, I would bet, it's one of the advantages Android has is that you can actually look at files on the system. I would bet there's an app out there, I'll have to ask the chat room to find one for us, that can take the MP4 and re-encode it as an MP3. I wouldn't be surprised. But you're better off. Just if you can do Bluetooth.
I will give that a shot. And yeah. I thank you. It's going to come in handy. I'm going up north soon, and I want to have all these programs.
You don't want to miss the tech guy?
No, this is during the week. I would never miss the tech guy. I'm leaving after your Sunday show next week.
It's a revolution for radio, but it's something radio has to deal with. I was talking to a program director at a big station. Won't say the name. We agreed. The real issue for radio now is that most people are going to start getting it over the internet. I have an electric car. You can't get AM radio in an electric car. There's too much interference. So the Tesla comes with TuneIn, built into its software.
What if you use that Sirius business?
It has satellite works fine.
Yeah.
FM works fine. It's just AM for some reason. An AM. Antenna would pick up too much interference from the electric motors. So, to my knowledge, no electric car comes with an AM radio.
I have trouble with an AM radio in my house, and I don't have any very sophisticated equipment here.
So, and this is going to happen with TV eventually. It'll happen sooner with radio. Eventually, it's all going to be on the internet. That's good for radio. You don't have to build transmitters and towers and all that expensive infrastructure. You just need internet access. But it also, is going to change, the economics of it and everything. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's good, though. It means people can listen to a station in L.A., anywhere in the world, and that's kind of neat. We have listeners to this show all over the world.
Well, that's why that Sirius thing is so good, because no matter where I am, I can pick up whatever.
Yeah, that's nice, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
He said the only negative to that is you pay a monthly fee. I'm not crazy about that.
Everything
costs something. Ugh.
My phone to you costs me money.
I know.
Not the call, of course.
You know what Robert Heinlein said? Tinstoffel. There is no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah, how true.
How true. Hey, great to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
All right, Richard. Let's see. Who's next here? I got to get close. Ed in Charlotte, North Carolina. First, Ed, you all buttoned down from the tropical storm now? Matthew going through town?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
We just got a lot of rain and wind. Not much, because we're mostly inland.
Good. What can I do for you?
I'm looking at upgrading my monitors I currently have. I've got some old 21-inch monitors, but I'm just confused with all the new monitors that are out there right now and want to kind of see about your recommendations. I'm looking to spend anywhere to $150 to $200 per monitor. Want to get at least two of them.
So the biggest change in monitors, of course, is size. 21 inches now is tiny, really. I mean, it used to be I spent so much money on a 20-inch monitor for my Mac way back in the day, a Radius monitor. But nowadays, typical monitors are 27 inches and up. They also are widescreen, typically. Instead of the 4:3 kind of squarish aspect ratio, they're widescreen. You may or may not want that. It's up to you. But I would look at the Dell monitors. They make very good monitors for a very affordable price. And Dell has a range, so you spend, and you can just judge it by price. The more you spend, the more, the quote, better the monitor is. Usually that has to do with color accuracy. So photographers will spend a lot of money on a monitor because they want red to be red and they want blue to be blue. You and I aren't even going to notice that difference. Get the inexpensive Dells. That's what I usually do, and they're great. And you're going to get an LCD. You'll probably get an IGZO, I-G-Z-O LCD panel. And I would start at 27 inches and look for high resolutions, too. I think 2880 by 1440, thereabouts.
Good deal. Hey, can I give a quick plug-in to a podcast one of my good friends has out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a podcaster. I support podcasting. What's your show? What's the show?
What's the show? The show is called Reset, R-E-S-E-T. It's by a person by the name of Dave McKay, uh, M- M-C-C-A-B-E, David McCabe. Really good podcast. He's got about four or five episodes out there. It'd be really nice to get a nice...
What does he talk about? It's gaming?
Technology in general.
Oh, technology. Okay, good.
He used to have a podcast called The Home Server Show, but you and me both know the Microsoft...
Yeah, thank you, Microsoft. You killed my podcast.
Yeah, and he also had another podcast, Surface Geeks, which, again, you know, not much into that as well. So we had to scrap both of those.
I now know why he calls his podcast Reset.
Yes.
He's pushed that button twice now.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's wise to, if you hitch your wagon to a star, you better hope that star is going to stay in the sky for a while.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why he's just doing a general podcast. But, you know, it'd be nice to get a good plug-in for him.
Good. Where can I find it? Just should I search for Reset Podcast?
Yeah, Reset. Just search for Reset. Right now he's got some reviews on there. It's really good. He's pretty much looking at different technologies, from home automation to phones to everything in general. Good. But it's a really good podcast. He does. He also does meetups every year. I've been to the last four.
That, by the way, is the key to podcast success, in my humble opinion, is building the community. You can't ignore your audience. Your audience is everything. So doing things like meetups and getting out there and really helps. It makes a difference. Even if maybe you don't generate a big audience, you've got a devoted audience, it just makes you feel good, doesn't it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Our show today, Brad, by the way, I should mention, I downloaded... How big is that? It's a couple of gigabytes. The Entergos distribution I'm putting Linux on this machine. It was seconds. I thought, whoa, what happened there? And then I realized, oh, I know what happened. I've got Sonic. I love our internet service provider, Sonic. You probably just heard that Xfinity has converted everybody to 1 terabyte per month caps. That's a lot. But I don't think anybody should have caps of any kind, and neither does Sonic. If you're lucky enough to be living in the North Bay Area, the East Bay Area of California, in San Francisco, check it out. See if you can get Sonic, the best, I will say it, the best internet service provider in the U.S. I wish they were everywhere. We have 10 gigabit symmetric fiber to our locale. It's really clear that people are not getting the internet they deserve. They're certainly not getting the internet they pay for. And what we need is better internet service providers. And Sonic is setting the standard for great internet service providers. Fast, affordable internet, phone, and TV to homes and businesses in all over California. Let me tell you what you get, and then you tell me how much you'd pay, okay? Well, you can see on the bottom of the screen if you're watching the video. Shh. Don't tell the audio folks this. You get 15 email accounts, a gigabyte of storage. You get personal web hosting with a new domain. You get fax line service. You get a home phone connection with unlimited local and long distance calling. You can keep your existing phone number. They'll switch it over. You get a company that gives you no bandwidth caps. They stand up for your privacy. You get friendly local customer support. And all this... Oh, did I mention gigabit speed? Gigabit speed, $40 a month. That's how it's supposed to be. It's not how it is for most of us. Stand up for privacy, for a company that takes care of you, for no bandwidth caps. Get Sonic. Join the internet revolution. Sonic.com/twit. Receive your first month of Sonic internet and phone service for free. And then if you want TV, you can bundle it with Dish and save $120 on your Sonic bill. Visit Sonic, Sonic.com/twit. Man, that's how it ought to be. I'm telling you. They're rolling it out as fast as they can. If you saw my interview with Dane Jasper, the CEO of Sonic, on Triangulation last month, watch it. Because he's really talking about the economics of it, why they charge what they charge, you know, the challenge of getting into every market. But I know he would love to be everywhere in the country. And by becoming a Sonic subscriber, if you're in the area, you help. Yeah, I think they want to go nationwide, Creaming Corn Cob. It's just, you know, watch the interview. Dane was really good, I thought. Sonic, Sonic.com/twit. And thank you, Sonic. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm doing all my downloading from here from now on. It was like, it's done? Wow. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88 Ask Leo. So some Samsung phones are blowing up again. Did you see that, the Note 7s? There's at least, well, if we heard one, Southwest Airlines guy was on a flight, was in his pocket, the Note 7. But the thing that's scary, it was a replacement Note 7. One of the supposedly fixed Note 7s. Started getting warm, took it out of his pocket, threw it on the ground, started smoking. They evacuated the plane. Fortunately, it was still at the gate. Evacuated the plane. The phone had not only burned itself, it burnt through the carpet down to the subflooring on the plane. Wow. And then we've heard three others. Now, the problem is Samsung's got to investigate. In the case of the Southwest flight, the Consumer Product Safety Commission wants that phone to investigate. We've got to figure out if it really was, you know, factory fixed, or maybe, you know, that's the key. But if this is true, if these are supposedly replacement Note 7s and they're bursting into flame, well, there's a problem. My advice at this point, I mean, I'm not going to indict Samsung until we learn more, but wouldn't be running out to buy a Note 7 anytime soon. If I were you, I would look at something else. This could be disaster for Samsung, because if there is a problem again, I think a lot of us would just say, okay, well, I guess I won't be buying any more Samsung phones. This is a potential problem for all phones. I got to point out, anything with a lithium-ion battery, your laptop, Dell's had a recall, Sony's had a recall, your phone, your car, if you drive an electric car, these lithium-ion batteries, as anything that has to store a lot of energy, are potentially volatile. Remember, you drive your automobile around, it's got a tank full of highly flammable gas. It needs to. You need all that energy to move a 2-ton vehicle around. But the lithium-ion batteries, most of the time, properly manufactured, are going to be benign, inert. There's two ways they can, however, overheat and explode. One is while charging. They've all got circuitry on them to sense the temperature. So if they start to overheat, they'll cut the charge. And then, of course, to prevent overcharging, which can really cause problems. That's when you get overheating. And if the problem is, inside a lithium-ion battery are volatile chemicals. And those chemicals, if heated too hot, will actually start to burn. Even in the absence of oxygen, they'll start to burn. And it's a highly enclosed space. And if you have something burning in a sealed space, at some point, the gases that are let off by the combustion are going to expand, and the thing is going to explode at some point. The other way a lithium-ion battery can cause problems is if it gets punctured. If oxygen can get into the volatile chemicals inside, they'll burst into flame. And so that's why these batteries are, you know, well contained. The fact that at least in a number of these Samsung Note 7 cases, the phone was not being charged but just sitting there tells me there's something wrong with the way the battery is being manufactured, the sealant. Samsung has not been too forthcoming about this. They implied it was a circuitry issue, but now I'm thinking they've got defective batteries, that they're exposing the contents of the lithium-ion battery to oxygen, to air, and occasionally when that happens, they're bursting into flame. That is not good. Other manufacturers have figured it out. Samsung needs to tell us why, what happened, and what they're doing to fix it. And until they do, I think the advice is, if you've got a Note 7, even if it's a replacement Note 7, by the way, all the carriers now have said, yeah, bring it in. Even if it's a replacement, we'll replace that with something else. We'll give you your money back, replace it with something else. Too bad, it was a great phone, but it's not worth it. It's not worth the risk. And we'll watch with interest to see what happens. But there were at least three cases. In fact, one guy was hospitalized for inhaling the chemicals coming off the burning phone. He got bronchitis from it. So this is not something to fool around with. And I think it's time to say, yeah, if you have a Note 7, I'm sorry. A great phone. Love that phone. Not today. Let's get something else. And there's lots of other good choices out there. I do wonder what this means in the long run, not just for the Note 7, but for Samsung in general. Not good. Not good. Graham on the line from London. Hello, Graham.
Hello there, Leo. Nice to speak to you. I've got you just watching you on my big TV here. Can you hear me okay?
Because I'm waving at you in London. I was just in London last week. I love England. It's great to talk to you. Thank you for listening.
I mean, I was just thinking, I own one of those DJI drones, and the batteries on those also.
Everything is lithium ion. And you have to trust the manufacturer to make it so that it's not going to burst into flame. And you know what? They don't usually. It's rare that they do.
I think one of the biggest problems, well, it's the problem really isn't really the device as such, is it? It's in the actual manufacturer of the actual battery.
I would say that's exactly
some sort of regulation.
Yeah, I would say they need
to bring some sort of strict regulation in where they're tested and deemed safe, if you like.
The BBC, you're saying, has just reported another Samsung phone bursting into flame?
Yes.
And it was a replacement Note 7?
News, it's there. Mm.
Wow.
It was. It's in Kentucky. A man woke up. It went to, and his bedroom was full of smoke.
Yeah, this is the guy who went to the hospital, I think. Yeah. He had smoke inhalation. Right. He had bronchitis caused by the smoke. That's not worth taking the chance. And, as you're pointing out, lithium, we got lithium ion everywhere. I'm driving a bomb. The entire bottom of my Tesla is lithium ion batteries, but they're manufactured properly. Now, admittedly, if they get punctured, and there have been cases, in fact, in the early design of the Tesla, it was because it's in the undercarriage. A rock or a stone could come up, and some Teslas have, in fact, caught on fire and burned to the ground because of punctured batteries. Tesla responded by putting a titanium barrier underneath that is much, much more difficult to puncture. So, you have a gas tank or petrol, right? You have a petrol tank in your car. That's deadly if it were to be punctured, right?
I mean, even the Boeing 787 had a problem.
That's right. They had to recall that. The Dreamliner was held back for a few months because of their lithium ion batteries. So it's not unusual. Are you sipping tea?
Sorry, I am. Yes.
How lovely.
I'm sipping my coffee.
Oh, coffee. Well, that's all right. Actually, I have learned this, that coffee was brought to us by the Brits. That there were coffee shops all over London in the 17th century. Before tea, there was coffee. Hey, it's great to talk to you, Graham. Thank you for the call, and thank you for listening.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Nope.
8888 Ask Leo. See, listeners all over the world. Weren't we just talking about that? All over the world. Love that. Thanks to the internet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, electric vehicles, lithium ion batteries, anything with a chip in it. Your battery has a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. I stand corrected. iPhone 48181 in our chat room says that he has a Nissan Leaf, an electric vehicle, and the AM radio does work in it except when quick charging. So I was mentioning that at least a few, I thought all electric vehicles were missing AM radios because of the interference from the electric motors, but I guess that's not true. I know my Tesla has no AM radio. And interestingly enough, it does come with an LTE connection. And so the Teslas come with TuneIn Internet Radio and Slacker as kind of your internet radio. Of course, if you're outside, I don't know, I'm not sure if they use Sprint or T-Mobile as their carrier, but if you're outside the cell range, I guess you'd have to listen to the radio. 8888 Ask Leo. The BMW i3 does not have an AM radio. I remember seeing that. Not sure, but I guess if you spent some time, you could fix it. I imagine Elon Musk, the founder and CEO of Tesla, just figures we're gonna just like Apple, we're just, we're going to move into the future. You don't need an AM radio in the car. That's got to kill radio stations, though. What do you mean? It's like headphone manufacturers probably aren't real happy about Apple. Because the only way you can use wired headphones with the new iPhones is by licensing. Either your user has to have an adapter or you license the Lightning port, because that's not that's proprietary. You have to pay Apple a pretty penny to use it. So making Lightning port headphones for an iPhone, for I think most headphone companies just won't. They're just going to, they'll skip that step, be my guess. Luis, San Pedro, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Luis.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. I'm almost in San Diego now, not in San Pedro.
I'm sorry. Thank you for your patience.
Oh, no, it's all good. I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I have a first-generation Mac Mini. The hard drive crashed, and I went to like one of those repair places, and they wanted to install a new hard drive and maybe some software, and they were charging me about $350. And I just was wondering whether installing the software is something that I can do myself.
Well, absolutely. The hard drive is something you can do yourself if you want.
Oh.
So the Mac Minis are kind of weird. They're held together not by screws so much as friction. And Apple, it's funny, you know, when you go to the Apple store, they have special tools for all the Macs. And the special tool they have for the Mac Mini looks strangely like a paint scraper, because that's basically what it is. It's a little wedge. So if you want to fix it yourself, you could do it for a lot less. The hard drive itself is cheap. Most of the $300 is labor, probably two-thirds of it. And so you could do it yourself. What I would suggest doing before you do it is go to a site where they'll walk you through the process and even sell you the tools to do it. One, of course, is iFixit. iFixit.com. They pride themselves as being kind of the manuals for everything and selling the tools to fix everything, including McDonald's Happy Meal toys. but they also will show you how to take apart a Mac Mini. The other place, and this is where I would probably recommend first and foremost, I get almost all my Mac aftermarket parts from Otherworld Computing. They've been in the business of selling Mac, and they're not a sponsor or anything, but they've been selling Mac parts forever, and they're very good. When you buy, for instance, if you go there and you look at Mac Mini replacement hard drives, they'll give you a broad, much broader variety of choices than Apple would. But they'll also have videos on there of how to do it, and they'll sell you the special tool, the paint scraper tool you need to open it. And I would watch the video to see if you're comfortable with the process.
Okay.
But if you know, it depends. Worst case, it's going to get a little scratched up. So if you don't care cosmetically how it looks, I would do it yourself.
And what's
the best way to get the software?
Who's this? There's another person.
I'm the other half.
Your voice changed, Luis.
Exactly.
I love this. Oh, okay. So the software is easy. How old is the Mac? How old is the Mac Mini?
It's a second generation.
No, it's pretty old
machine.
Yeah, newer Macs, it's very easy because you press Command R during reboot, and it can actually download the operating system from the internet.
Oh,
And you should try that on your Mini. It might be able to do that. In which case, you got no problems. You just, you know, Command R, you go to the recovery mode, and it down get it online. It'll say, well, what's your internet connection? If you're on Wi-Fi, you enter the password, and it'll download usually. I wonder if this is changing now. But in the past, my experience has been it downloads the version of OS X that came with your Mini, and then it's up to and then it's up to you to update it.
Okay, that's great. And then or can I put it on the other Mac? USB drive.
So that's yes. So that's my if it doesn't do the Command R recovery thing, and it probably won't because it's old enough. What's the latest version of OS X you can put on that? Do you know?
I would guess the last one that was on it when it crashed was the Mountain Lion.
Yeah, that would make sense. Mountain Lion usually is the cutoff. So what you could do is you could, and it's free, you can download Mountain Lion from the App Store.
Nice.
Don't run the installer. Before you run in the installer, you will have a file in your apps folder, your applications folder, that says install Mountain Lion. You open that, you right-click on it to see the contents. You go into the contents, and you can find the actual installer file. It's a large, it's the largest file in there. It's a 4 gigabyte file. I think it usually says installer, ESD, something like that. You get that file out. That's the installer. Then you can put that on a USB key. Actually, I would recommend, we'll put a link in the show notes, techguylabs.com.
Sure.
Because it'll tell you how to take a USB key, burn that file to the USB key so that you can boot it on the Mac Mini and install OS X.
Sweet.
It's easy. You can do this. You don't need to spend $300 to do this.
Right on. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Apple's funny. They don't want you to get inside. Going back to the original Macintosh, Steve Jobs did not want you to open that thing. They put weird screws. We've gotten used to it now. They were called Torx, T-O-R-X screws on those things so that no one could open it. Only an authorized Macintosh dealer. And there maybe was some logic there because that had a CRT screen in there, and you could hurt yourself. CRT screens were like giant capacitors. They would discharge electrical current, significant electrical current, if you touched them in the wrong spot. So maybe there was a reason. But Steve, I think it was he was really of the ilk that, no, nobody should go inside our machines. He hated that idea. And Apple has just continued along those lines. And so every Macintosh has either some strange, weird screw. Even the iPhones have weird screws, pentalobe and Torx screws, or some strange method of opening it. If you want to, for instance, upgrade the hard drive on an iMac, I've watched it. I've never done it myself, but I had one of my engineers do it. I said, I'm not doing this. You would need a giant suction cup. I'm not kidding you. To remove the glass on the screen. Because there's no easy way to do that, and they don't make it easy. Now, what they do is they train their employees, their genius guys at the gals at the Genius Bar at the Apple Store, and they even give them special tools, special machinery, so that they can do it easily. But they don't want you doing it. And the Mac Mini was a great example where it was just very tight, and the magic tool they provided the geniuses looked so much like a paint scraper. I have to think it was like a chrome plated paint scraper, but you had to wedge it in to kind of pry it apart. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
Thank you. Putty knife, that's what it was. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Whoosh! Coming at you over to our radio and the internet. 8888 Ask Leo. Our website, if you'd like to get links to the things I mention or add your own thoughts or just search for answers to questions you have, techguylabs.com. And we do put the audio and the video of the shows after the fact there as well. Techguylabs.com. Les is next in Anaheim. Hi, Les.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Leo. And one wild thing first, just to tell you, I doubt you have it set up where I was on hold for quite a long time. And every time you go to a break, it's like I'm sitting in your studio there in a chair listening to you guys talk.
I know. I know that. Yeah.
Is that really the way?
Not only that, but if you wanted to watch, you could watch because we stream behind the scenes all the time.
Yeah, that's strange. Okay. I'm just not used to it.
Did I say anything embarrassing?
You know, you didn't. You were really good.
I was trained very early in my career, and I'm about to, by the way, next month or December, I guess, hit my 40th year in broadcasting. Day one, they said, if you're in the room with a microphone, it can be live. Remember good that.
Good advice.
Some people just forget.
Yes. Okay. What I wanted to ask you is, I have a problem with my PC that I have right now. It's an old PC, and now that I have the problems that I have where I can hardly get in to access my stuff in the computer, I want to go out and either get a new PC or a new laptop. And I don't know which would work for me best. I can tell you I only do like a couple things basically with my computer anymore because I just use my smartphone otherwise. And that is I use Photoshop is the big thing that now I can't get to it. And so in my pictures and stuff on the computer. Anyway, that's my question. What to go?
So you use Photoshop's your primary thing that you want to do with this?
Yeah, to tell you the truth.
So the good news is Photoshop works on Windows or OS X, Mac or PC. Do you care which?
Yes. I forgot to add, I'm not going to get a Mac because I want to spend as little money as possible.
Well, there you go. That rules Apple out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the only reason I ask about Photoshop is, and I'm going to tell you, obviously you're going to get a Windows 10 machine. I'll tell you some good ones. But is that for a lot of people, unless you're doing Photoshop or, you know, if you're a photographer or you're designing rocket ships or editing video, you shouldn't get a full general purpose PC. You should get a Chromebook or something like that. A lot cheaper, a lot more reliable, a lot more secure. But you need Photoshop. The burden is now on you to keep it running, to keep it secure.
Photoshop Elements only.
That's fine. Elements is great. I love Elements. Okay. You might find if all you use is Elements, I'll ask, you know, Chris Marquardt's coming up, our photo guy. I'll ask him if he has some browser-based recommendations because there are tools that are probably as capable as Elements that you could use on a Chromebook.
Well, I love Photoshop. All right. I really don't want to change
it. I won't talk you out of it.
Chromebook.
Yeah.
What is a Chromebook?
Chromebook is Google's operating system, the Chrome OS. It's essentially just a Chrome browser and whatever extensions can be installed on the Chrome browser. And then of late, Google has added also Android capabilities. So any Android app, there are and the reason that makes it is good for you is there are Android apps that are very capable for photo editing, like Snapstream, that would do everything you can do in Photo Elements on a Chromebook. The reason I like Chromebooks is it's super secure. It's really locked down. No viruses, no security exploits. If something goes wrong, it has a feature called Power Wash that gets you right back to where you were.
What do they range at?
And they start at 200, maybe 150 bucks.
And that's not a problem to get something like that? I mean, it's so low price, but
it's the number one selling computer on Amazon right now, or is the category is Chromebooks. They are outselling Macintoshes last quarter. They are 21% of all the computers bought by schools last year were Chromebooks.
Wow.
This is a growing category, and for good reason. You don't have to worry about viruses. You don't have to worry about, you know, all the complexity goes out of it. Now, the negative is, it's designed to be online, so you want to you don't use it somewhere where you can't get online.
That's fine.
Yeah, most people, that's fine.
Wow.
So I would look. There are Dell. Well, I'll go. I would recommend Dell anyway.
Okay.
Dell makes some excellent. You want a laptop or you want a tower? What do you want? What form factor?
Well, that's what I just don't. I've never had a laptop. I don't know if it's capable.
Absolutely, modern laptops are 10 times faster than that old machine.
Yeah, I see.
So I would look at a Dell. So if you want a Windows 10 laptop, the best Windows 10 laptop is the Dell XPS line. They make a 13 and a 15. You probably, for a photographer, 15's better. They're very nice screens.
Cool.
Beautiful. And then while you're there, look at Dell's Chromebooks. They have aluminum bodies. They're really nice machines. The trick is you won't get Photoshop on it. And so if you really want Photoshop Elements, you're going to get the Dell XPS is affordable, relatively, and a really sweet machine. Don't go too cheap on a Windows machine because, you know, you can get HP makes the Stream. It's like a $300 Windows PC. But the way they cut costs, you know, they're using cheap components.
Well, why are you saying now to go to the
Chromebook?
PC instead of the Dell Chromebook is a laptop, right?
Yeah.
And so is that what you're saying?
Actually, they make I don't know if Dell sells them, but they certainly make Chrome boxes that are their desktops as well.
Yeah, but I can't use the Photoshop on
No. You need Windows 10 if you're going to do Photoshop. You're going to need Windows.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And that's that.
Okay, so you're determined to use Photoshop, no problem. I like Dell. I would, again, be careful. I would say I'm going to spend at least $500. And the reason is you can get it cheaper, but you're going to get cheap components that are going to be more of a problem in the long run.
Really?
Yeah.
$500.
Yeah, think $500. How much do you want to spend?
$350.
Yeah. Well, you can do it. HP sells them. Acer is a good low-cost vendor. A-C-E-R.
Why can't you use Photoshop with the Dell Chrome?
It's not Windows. They only make Photoshop for Windows and Mac. It's not Windows. Oh. It's Chrome.
Okay.
It's base. Don't tell anybody, but it's actually Linux.
But no other laptops.
There's Lenovo laptops, but you want cheap. So I'm going to steer you away from Dell and Lenovo, and maybe you want to look at HP, make some very cheap laptops, and Acer, A-C-E-R, makes some very cheap laptops. You can get cheap.
Expensive or cheap?
No, cheap. You're being cheap, but that's right. I don't blame you. Look, not everybody's rolling in dough. I understand. You don't want to spend a lot of money. Just understand when you save money, what you give up is you're going to have lower quality components, lower quality screen, slower processor, and absolutely zero support.
500 and I can get a Dell XPS.
Yeah, I would look at the Dell refurbished, Google Dell refurbished. And a desktop will actually be cheaper than a laptop with Dell. I think you probably get some pretty good for 500. Go see if you can squeeze out 500 bucks. That'd be the best for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Cheap or inexpensive? Cheap!
Now that Photoshop's online, though.
Huh?
Photoshop
online?
It's subscription, CC, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't. But you have to have a PC to run it. Yeah, no. It would be nice if they did Photoshop online. I think they're this close. They think they're this close. They want to do that for sure.
Elements pretty limited, but for what
you do. You know what? Elements is the Photoshop engine with a lot of junk on top of it.
It's pretty techy. So, to add all the add-ons, GIMP's free, but...
Yeah, he could use the GIMP on Linux. Yeah, if he wants to be really cheap. Yeah. So. Truth is, if he really wanted to be cheap, he'd refurbish the old machine, put a new hard drive in it, and put Linux on it. Oh, let me tell you about Epson. This would be a good time to talk about the Epson EcoTank printers, would it not? Our show today brought to you by Epson and the makers of these great printers. You heard, of course, that another guy just did a firmware modification, so you can only use cartridges made by the other guy in their printers. Did you hear that? See, I love this. Is Epson's going the opposite direction. That is an anti-consumer move. Epson is all about the consumer. It's all about you, and that's why they created these EcoTank printers. Printers that don't use ink cartridges. They're inkjet printers, but they have, instead of the cartridges, a tank on the side that holds 2 years of ink. The ET4550, the one we use here, Lisa has it in her office, and we have it at home, will print 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages with the ink that comes with the printer. And then in 2018, when I have to buy more ink, to just buy little bottles, some of the bigger printers use packs, and it's 80% less expensive than these low-cost replacement bottles are awesome. You get the Precision Core printing technology, crisp black and white text, vivid colors, two-sided printing, no warm-up time, the document feeder, 30-page document feeder that actually works, prints from your phone, from your tablet, wirelessly. These are awesome printers. CES 2016 Innovation Awards winner. 2016 Small Biz Windows Printer of the Year. The awards keep on coming. No wonder. This is consumer first. Epson.com/EcoTank. Transform the way your home, office, or work group prints for the best combination of ease and value. Turn to the Epson EcoTank printers. EPSON.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. All righty, Chris. Hey, Chris, is there anything that can...
Simple photo editor?
Yeah.
Well, for really simple but actually quite capable photo editing, I've been coming to recommend Polar, Polarr.co.
Okay.
Runs on virtually any platform, including a web browser and Chrome.
Polar, Polar.
RR.co. .co.
Nice.
Check that out.
I gotta try that.
I think they are going to start charging for it in some fashion, but actually not very expensive. And it really runs. I talked to this guy. They even have the engine running on BlackBerry.
What?
Yes.
They should stop right now because...
If you put it on your Mac, it integrates into the Photos app nicely too.
What?
Yes.
That's crazy talk.
It's a very capable little tool.
Become a and it, wow.
And you discover it. Skip that step. Just on the top, click the skip button. And now on the right-hand side, you should get some...
Yeah, let me open a... This is
I think in the right sidebar, or am I seeing your whole screen here?
No, let me...
Now I am. Click on that little dial on the right-hand side, that round dial.
Adjustments? Wow, look at this.
Look at that.
Look at this. Will you look at that, my friend? What? This is nice. This is kind of... This is kind of more like what Google had and killed... In Google Plus, radial mask, gradient. Oh, that has mask? Doesn't have layers.
I don't think so.
No. Look at this. This is great.
But what they do really, really well.
In the browser. Wow, look at that. This is good.
And it comes as a Chrome app as well, and it runs on iOS, and it's pretty much anywhere, directly on your Mac.
And you're going to do, you want to do a debunk? What do you want to do? Mythbuster?
We have another secret superpower.
Secret superpower. All right.
We continue that series for a while.
Here we go. Chris Marquardt is here.
So, the Chris Marquardt photo hour. Are we doing an hour now?
I wish. I'm just calling it that.
You should have told me.
It's the Chris Marquardt photo hour that lasts 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Oh, did I have fun? A photographer's paradise. You know what happened, though?
I saw some of your pictures.
Lisa brought her beautiful Sony A7R II.
Mm-hmm.
And a very nice lens that I got for her, one of the new G lenses, the master lenses.
Beautiful.
And she kept borrowing my Leica Q and said, this is so much better. I love this. Look at the Leica light.
In the end, you only need one camera.
You only need one. You really only need one, and it doesn't have to be. In fact, my iPhone 7
and
was
most people
good
have
too.
It in their pocket, right?
Yeah, frankly, the iPhone 7 got some of the best pictures I took on the whole trip.
Yeah,
I'm embarrassed to say.
Well, it's the camera that is most ready that you just have.
It's
with
nice
you
that it has this. It's not zoom, but it has now two lenses. One is 28 millimeters effective.
Oh, so you have a plus, okay?
Yeah, and one is 56 millimeters effective, and that makes it just enough of a difference that. Because that's the thing really missing, I think, from camera phones is this ability to kind of be more than just one wide-angle lens.
True.
And you don't want to do digital zoom because that looks terrible. So I was pretty happy. Pretty happy. Well, anyway, enough about me.
I saw some of your pictures. I was happy about your pictures, too.
Oh, I haven't even posted the best stuff. Yeah. Look at Lisa's pictures.
You had some stuff on. Oh, and Lisa's as well.
Yeah.
You guys had a lot of fun there.
So you heard our last caller. He wants these Photoshop elements on a Windows PC, and I'm trying to talk him out of it. But the problem is, if you buy a Chromebook, which I think most people should be happy with, I don't know of any. There's nothing Photoshop-like, is there, on a Chromebook? Or is there?
Well, there is a software that I've been using integrated, directly on the Mac, and it runs and integrates with the Photos app, and it runs on iOS and on all sorts of platforms, including Chrome and the web browser. And it's called Polar, Polarr.co. And it can pretty much replace some of that. It's a very capable little editor that runs in your web browser, and it does a good job. And you can download it as a Chrome app as well. It will install as a Chrome app.
And it's free?
I don't think so. I think they want to charge a bit for it, but it is very, very reasonable, extremely reasonable.
Wow.
I don't know the exact price at this point, but I think they wanted to go to a model where you pay and then can use it on pretty much any platform.
This is really neat. This is
definitely worth checking out.
It's not like a full Photoshop, but if you're using Photoshop elements... depending on what you need to do,
I think it can replace most of that.
Yeah.
And it's fast. It's super fast. It's amazingly fast, even in the browser.
Okay. Polarr.co. That's worth taking a look at. And that would work on a Chromebook, amazingly enough.
I think it should, yes.
Yeah. So we're doing superpowers with Chris. He's giving us new photographic superpowers. What is our power
Another
this week?
Secret superpower. Portraits that pop.
Portraits that pop.
Yep. And a lot of good portraits out there, but for some people it's more like an accident when you get a good portrait and you don't really know why it's happening. So there are a few things that will help make you become a better portrait photographer. First thing I always look for when I shoot a portrait is the background. What's going on in the background, and especially lines in the background. You might have a horizon that cuts right through the eye line, and that will just look funny because it'll be like this arrow through the head kind of thing going on here. Or a lamppost growing out of the head. Stuff like that in the background is something that I try to avoid. A simpler background is often a better background. So move around a bit, maybe take a step to the left or the right, and look what happens right behind the subject. It's very easy with portraits to kind of lose track of and just ignore and forget about the background. And later on, you see that picture on your computer and you go, I should have really done that in a different way. So the background, first thing, the light, of course, always in photography is very important. If you try to take a portrait in harsh sunlight, in direct sunlight, when the sun is out and shines right in the face of that person, first of all, they'll squint, and second, it'll just make very weird shadows under the nose and under the eyebrows, and it usually doesn't look that good. So I will try to take a person out of the sun, into the shade, under a tree, or just into an area where the direct sunlight doesn't hit them. There are a few portraits where the direct sunlight works, but I think you should be aware of that being a potential problem. If you can, with a camera, usually works nice. A bit of an out-of-focus background, especially if you have a camera that has a bit of a bigger sensor, that's much easier. Or in future, the iPhone 7 Plus, which apparently will do that as well in software, kind of throws a bit of the distraction out of the picture by making it a bit less conspicuous in the background. I usually try not to go too overboard with the out of focus. Like if I have a 1.4 f/1.4 lens, which is a very bright lens and it gets a very out of focus background, but I rarely use it at that f-stop because the background sometimes I feel is too out of focus. I still want a bit of context, but I don't want it to be too intrusive. Then there are a few things that I would call the zones of attention. If you look at a person's face, there are just a few areas that people sometimes don't really like about themselves. Let's start at the bottom, the chin. Double chin is something that almost no one really likes about themselves in a picture.
I have like a quadruple chin.
We can take care of that. So if you ask the person in front of the camera to just move their head slightly forward. No.
I always look up.
Don't over. Well, that's if you take a selfie with the outstretched arm from above with your phone and look up. That's what I call a Facebook avatar.
Yeah.
That looks.
It's pretty obvious what you're up
it's
to.
It's very obvious.
Or you could put your hands under your chin. Like
but you
that.
Can just ask them to just move their head a bit forward. That helps. Or you shoot from slightly above their eye line, so they have to look up to you a bit, and that will stretch the chin as well. The eyes, another area of focus. Well, first of all, focus literally. If you focus on the eyes, if you can influence where the camera focuses, if it doesn't do face recognition anyway, focusing on the eyes.
Try to do it with animals especially, but humans too.
Oh yes.
I always, when I'm doing manual focus, I go in the eyes. That's what I'm looking at.
And most modern cameras do that anyway. They look for faces, right, and they get it right. Light in the eyes. If the eyes are dark, it's usually not so good. You want little catch lights in the eyes. You want little light spots in the eyes from reflection. So maybe turn that person around a bit and have them look a bit more towards the light so you get some interesting catch lights. They make the picture more alive. They make it more lively. The size of the eyes is also a thing. If you look at someone else and they move their head forward slightly, their eyes become bigger, and that makes a nicer photo. If you move the head too far back, the eyes get smaller, and that sometimes looks funny. So people like themselves with nice eyes in the photos. Glasses is another thing. See someone wearing glasses, watch the reflections. just some light sources reflecting off the eyes. And last but not least, teeth.
Teeth
are something to retouch in post. There are
whiten them.
Tools to make them a bit white, just a tiny little bit whiter.
Chris Marquardt, discoverthetopfloor.com, ladies and gentlemen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
Teeth, whiten them.
Well, you know, the actual trick is not to like some people desaturate them. They use a little brush in Lightroom and take the saturation out. That makes black and white teeth and just look horrible.
Yeah.
Some people brighten them, like they really crank up the exposure on the teeth. That looks weird too. The trick is to add a bit of blue.
Thank you, guys. I'm going to say goodbye to Rick and Louisa. Thank you.
Great to see you. Enjoy. I mean, wait till you get out there. It's super hot. You're going to go, what the heck? I thought it was winter.
We're going to go take pictures of the Golden Gate.
All right. Sorry, Chris. I just had to say goodbye to our visitors.
No worries. No, the trick is you use a brush and you can add a bit of blue to the teeth that takes
blue.
The yellow out.
Oh, that's interesting.
That counteracts
without
the yellow.
Just
don't
overdo it.
Without
making it bright white. Yeah, because sometimes if you whiten it, people go, wow, those are white.
And that... Then you look like you're someone running for office, you know, on a big poster. That just looks wrong.
Not good.
No, add a little bit of blue, maybe a bit of brightness, but don't overdo that. And the little bit of blue takes care of the yellow and makes them look
perfect.
Very, very natural. Just not too much blue, otherwise you look like you come from Mars.
Always good stuff. And thank you for the polar thing. Right now it's on sale. This is a good time.
It's worth checking out. I interviewed the guy on my show, and he's real. They're in San Francisco, I think.
You're kidding.
In the Silicon Valley, little startup, and I talked to them, and they are. I think they are. They're worth getting the word out a bit.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely start promoting this. This is awesome.
Try it out, but put it on your Mac too, because when you then open the Photos app, it is an extension for the Photos app. It replaces the Photos interface when you open it.
Well, and right now I think somebody said it's $1.99 for the the Mac, for the Pro version.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Test it. All right.
Thank you, sir.
Talk to you again
next week. Next week. Take care. Oh, what's the assignment?
The assignment right now is scale.
Scale. All right.
And I think we could use a few more, so I want to leave that open for another couple of weeks.
I will plug it.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks. Bye, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, the phone number. Alex is in Sacramento. Before I get to you, Alex, let me just real quickly mention, if you are a regular listener to the show, you know that every time Chris Marquardt's on, he gives us an assignment, because we really want to get everybody out taking pictures. It's not a competition. There's no prize. But everybody, you know, the best way to get to be a better photographer is to take more pictures. So we do an assignment once a month. We review. Chris will pick three of the best and review it on the air. So there's a little glory in that. But if you'd like to participate, our current assignment is scale. So he'll give us a word or concept to illustrate. In this case, I don't think he means scale like the scales on a lizard or the scale in your bathroom. I think he means size. So take a picture that will illustrate size, scale in that sense, in the sense of size. And the way it works is you can upload that picture to Flickr, which is a Yahoo photo sharing site. You probably already have a membership. If you don't and you're a photographer, you should get one. And then inside of Flickr, we have a tech guy group for this. And you'll know you're in the right group if you search for the tech guy group on Flickr, because it has my face, but it also has like 10,000, 11,000 members and lots of pictures. And then once a week, you can pick your favorite illustration of scale. And by the way, it doesn't have to be a fancy camera. A lot of the best photos come from a camera phone. That's fine. It's the image, not the camera that makes the difference. But upload your favorite scale picture once a week. Make sure you put scale in the tags so we know that that's your submission. And we're going to do a couple more weeks of submissions. This turns out to be kind of a challenging one. Not a lot of submissions yet. So get those pictures in. I'll take some too. Scale. Illustrate it, upload it to Flickr, and in a couple of weeks we'll review it. Now we go to Sacramento. Alex, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. I had a quick question for you. I decided to move my photo library from iCloud to Google.
Okay.
And so what I did was previously I had 5 gigs in iCloud, and I decided to buy another 200 gigs. You add them up together, you get 205 gigs, which is normal.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and tried to purchase 200 gigs from Google, but that is not available. It's 100 gigs, and then it goes to a terabyte.
Yeah.
So I said, well, okay, fine. I'm just going to go ahead and get the 100 gigs and play with it. So previously I had 16 gigs, and I added another 100 gigs. I was expecting it to be 116 gigs, but then I saw it's 102 gigs.
Huh.
So I decided to go ahead and contact Google and say, well, missing, a couple of gigs here and there. And they said, no, what's happening is that you buy 100 gigs. That means we bring you up to 100 gigs. And
oh, it's not additional.
Exactly. So you're bumping you up to 100 gigs.
Right.
And then you had 2 gigs of promotional blah, blah, and therefore you get 102 gigs. I said, well, guys, that doesn't make sense, right? It has to be a no-fuss, simple deal, which is not the deal I'm getting with you. So I said, well, go ahead and refund me the money. And they said, fine, we're going to go ahead and do that. But then I asked another question of them. I said, okay, well, I'm about to purchase the Pixel phone, which I'm hearing that it allows you to back up original photos unlimited.
Right.
And you should be fine.
Right.
After about, believe me or not, it's truly amazing. After about 90 minutes of going back and forth, he finally said, no, that is not true. You still... Well, it is unlimited, he said. I said, no, it's not unlimited technically. It is compressed. It's not the original one. We were going back and forth, and I didn't want to really engage him on that one because it wasn't time for it. So it turns out that what he's saying is, no, you're not going to get unlimited, original backup for your photos using Pixel. You do get unlimited backup, photo backups, reduced size. Which is, it's really confusing.
But you get that anyway. We all get that anyway.
Right. So it was very confusing. Either they don't know what they're doing or there is something that I'm not understanding here. But set that aside for a second. And the other thing was this that I was going to...
By the way, that's not what people are saying and not what Google reported. They said if you buy a Pixel phone, you will get unlimited original photo backup from your phone. Now, you won't get it for everything, but any picture you take on that Pixel phone will be backed up as originals.
Right.
Unlimited. That's whoever you were talking to, I think, got it wrong.
Yeah, so that's what I was expecting, right? And I said, okay, well, how do you differentiate? So I got two Nexus 5Xs, right? Which, I'm using. Well, how does the system differentiate photos taken from the 5Xs versus the Pixel? I mean, it becomes very, very convoluted and confusing.
I'm sure they have a way of identifying which phone it's coming from.
Right, but so this nickel and diming thing, right, so that, we're going to pump you up to 100 gigs, so whatever you had before doesn't matter.
Well, that I understand. That's Apple does it one way, Google does it another way. Google's saying you buy 100 gigs, you get 100 gigs. Apple's saying you buy 100 gigs, you get 100 plus the 5 free gigs we gave you.
Right.
It's pretty close. I think that's both are reasonable interpretations of what buying 100 gigs means.
Right.
So
what I wanted to make sure is, please tell me, based on your understanding, what does it mean as far as you buy a phone and it's Pixel? Is that original?
I'm looking at every... Now, I'm trying to find the a Google source for this, but I've just been looking... At every article about the Pixel announcement says, Pixel owners, here's from Android Central, get unlimited full resolution photo and video. Now, maybe the disconnect was the guy you were talking to on the phone wanted to make it clear that these are JPEGs. They are compressed in the phone. They're not raw, although there is a checkbox to say backup raw. I bought a Pixel. When it comes, I will let you know.
Okay.
But I think they've been very clear. I'm going to have to go to the Google store and read the verbiage precisely. But I think they've been pretty clear that it is unlimited original photo backup. Now, here's the question. I do believe the Pixel is capable of raw. Will it back up the RAW, that is the completely uncompressed version of that image, or will it only back up the compressed JPEG?
Exactly.
And that may be the difference, right? It may not back up the RAW. So let me, you know, and you can do this too. Go to store.google.com and just let's read it carefully. And if anybody's listening from Google, give me a ring and we can let's find out what's going on here. Because I think that's you raise a very interesting point, Alex. And I don't know exactly which of the two possibilities it is. Is it unlimited original JPEGs or unlimited original RAW? There would be a difference there, especially if you're serious about photography. So let me look into it, see what I can find out for you.
And I have one last question for you. Sorry for taking your time.
Not at all. That's what I'm here for.
Thank you, sir. So what I really would like to do is there is no such thing as freebies, right? So if you're getting unlimited backups, obviously you don't know what Google is doing.
Somebody has to pay for it. Somebody has to pay for it. And exactly. Either you pay for it with cash or you pay for it with data.
Right. So do you know of any services where I can go ahead and, let's say, have 200 gigs, and then I create my own encrypted capsule?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I, you know, use that capsule as my storage versus... Yeah. That thing is unencrypted on their side, and God knows some Ukrainian guy might have access to it.
Yeah. So. And it's pretty clear that if you read the license agreements, what Google really wants when people give Google their data, of course, they're going to give you the chance to delete it and control it. But ultimately, what you're doing is donating, in effect, to Google's artificial intelligence process. They're learning from your photos how to sort, how to understand what they're taking pictures of. And they're very upfront about that. So if you don't like that idea, there are other choices. Now, you probably heard of Dropbox. The problem with Dropbox is they have the key. So even though your data is encrypted, Dropbox employees, and this is what you are worried about, can look at it. And any service that I know of that is coming straight from your phone is going to be like that. If you copied your phone to your computer, you could encrypt it locally on your computer, then use Dropbox, and only you would have access to that data. But if you wanted to upload from your phone, from your camera, I think in every case, it's going to transmit, and it may be encrypted in place, but I think without a doubt that the keys will be held by the company that is holding the storage. So if your concern is absolute privacy, you know, look at Amazon's photos. If you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, you do get unlimited free photo backup. And Amazon's not in the data business in the way that Google is or Facebook is. So maybe that's a safer place. But everything, Apple has to charge you. This storage is not free for them. So it's always a good question. Well, how do they make money on this? And make sure you're comfortable with the answer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, yeah, and it's Google, so there's no guarantee that the deal lasts forever. Although, I kind of think storage for Google is cheap. I use OwnCloud. I think OwnCloud is a great solution. Actually, yeah, OwnCloud would work, right? All right, that's good. We'll mention that in NextCloud. We'll mention that. That's a good point. But then you're providing the hard drive. When we come back, we'll talk about that. That's a good one. Ooh. Did I talk about Rocket Mortgage yet today? I don't think I did. So the folks at Quicken Loans know that you are geeks. I don't know how they knew that. but they figured that out. They figured, hey, you know, anybody who listens to this show is probably pretty sophisticated. And maybe when they want to go out and refi or get a new home loan, maybe they don't want to do the old 19th century routine of digging through papers, bringing in a giant box to the mortgage broker, you know, who's sitting there, Bob Cratchit style with a green eye shade and sleeve garters and a quill pen. Well, let me see. I have some paper here. I can check the loan rates. Maybe you would just like to do that all online. In fact, maybe you'd like to do it in a system, you know, without getting up from the couch on your phone or your tablet, and do it in a way that you could submit all the paperwork, pay stubs and all the, you know, investment documents, the bank statements, whatever it is they need, just with a push of a button. And that you could do it instantly and you get an instant approval and you get a product that's tailored for you. Maybe that's the kind of thing a technically literate person would like. So they created Rocket Mortgage, and that's exactly what it is. It brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. Quicken Loans has always been a great place to get a mortgage. But Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated 19th century time-consuming bits of applying for a mortgage out of the equation.
Rocket Mortgage. You can do it on your phone and your tablet from the convenience of your couch. If you're looking to refi, if you're looking to buy, check it out. QuickenLoans.com/techguy. QuickenLoans, QuickenLoans.com/techguy. And that is an equal housing lender, of course, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans at quickenloans.com/techguy. We thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. Exploding lithium ion batteries. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still use Skype and call in. We have listeners all over the world. It's nice. The website is techguylabs.com, by the way. Techguylabs.com. Colton, California. Stan, he's next. Hi, Stan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, not bad. Hey, listen, I have a question about my Microsoft Word program.
Okay.
When I go into Word and I try to print anything from Word, no matter what it is, when you go to the file tab and bring it down and hit print.
Yeah.
I get an error message. It just makes that dunk noise and gives me an error message, no matter what it is.
Well, that's not right, is it? And you have a printer hooked up via USB cable? Or?
No, I have it hooked up on Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi. And you can print from other, like you can open Notepad and print from that just fine, right?
Yeah, anything else prints fine.
Well, it sounds like the install of Word is missing something or other. How did you get Word? Did you buy it outright and it came on a DVD, or do you subscribe to Office 365? How do you get Word?
Yeah, I subscribe to 365.
Okay. I mean, something's missing, the print stuff. And so my guess is the only way to fix this would be to uninstall and reinstall Word.
Okay.
Because if you can print from Windows to your printer, you know, open Notepad and print a page from that, then your printer's set up and working just fine. Something went wrong in the install. Sometimes this happens. There is a repair feature in the Office install. So that's the first thing I do. You download the installer from the Office site, office.com. And you may even already have it. I think you probably would if you installed it. And then there's a repair feature. Try that first. Sounds like some pieces just didn't get installed properly or got damaged. It's not unusual. Well, it's unusual, but it's not unheard of. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
All right.
I will try that.
Yeah. JC Techie in our chat room says, I don't know if this is an answer. Stop and start, restart the print spooler service before you reinstall. I don't know if that's really it, because you can print from other programs, which presumably use that print spooler. But you know how to get to services? You right-click on My Computer, you select Properties, and you go to the System Management Console, and you can see all the services that are running. One of them will be called Print Spooler, and you could restart it. I don't think that's it, though. I think something went wrong in the install process. Now, wait a minute. Let me look before I let you go, because Slow-Mo in our chat room has given me a link to something on the Microsoft support site. What is it? How to troubleshoot printing problems in Word. There you go. We'll put a link to this in the website, techguylabs.com. But the first thing I'd do is just try repairing Office. I wouldn't worry too much about the print spool or anything like that. That's not something you should have to worry about. Natalie, Los Angeles. Hi, Natalie. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Thank you for breaking all the stuff down to layman's terms. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm kind of like a translator.
Yeah.
I translate geek.
Yes, you do. So listen, I broke my screen on my Samsung S7.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. And I can't get my information off. Is there any way around it? Some people online say yes, there is.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
All the data is still there. If you break the screen, it just means you can't use it. But the data is still inside that box. So what you need to find is somebody who repairs Samsung phones, and they can get the data off. You know, it's kind of like a computer without a screen, right? The stuff's
right.
still there. It's just you can't figure out how to access it. If you had the right USB to go connector, Samsung supports USB to go, which makes the phone look like a drive, then you could hook it up to a computer and it would just look like a thumb drive on the computer and you could copy files off of. That's another way to do it. Whoever, who you know, if you go to a, you know, one of those phone repair places, they'll have that kind of cable and they can do it for you. Or you could go online and order a Samsung USB to go adapter. And what that would do is turn your phone into a drive that you could then... Well, actually, that's wrong, isn't it? Yeah, because I think it's the other way around. USB to go lets you access a USB drive. So what you want, yeah, and this is why the user interface would be handy, is you want to be able to connect the phone via a USB cable. Normally what would happen on the screen is the phone would pop up a thing saying, do you want me to be a camera or a hard drive right now? Do you want to do what they call PTP, phone transfer protocol, or MTP, mass storage transfer protocol? And that you can't get to because you can't. Ah, here's one. Thank you. Uncle Bick in the chat room says Samsung has software. It's called Keys, K-I-E-S. You can get it from Samsung.com. That you put on a Windows machine. Do you have a Windows computer?
Yes.
I think the question is, can you use Keys without interacting with it on the phone? Try it. Download that software. Connect the phone via a USB cable, the same cable you use for charging. And see if Keys can see the drive on the phone. I think it might be able to.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Otherwise, a third-party repair company can do it.
Well, it, you know, the phone now wants you to hit allow on the old phone. And if the screen doesn't work, you can't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Keys should get around that.
I think so, yeah. But if it doesn't, then try that first because that's a free download. And you can at least see if it works. And if it doesn't, then bring it into the shop and they can do it. Because just, I mean, unless you're like, if you drove over the phone, if you didn't just break the screen, but you actually crushed the phone, then your data might be lost. But you just dropped it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That doesn't, the data's still there. It's just the screen isn't working.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Try plugging it into a Windows PC. And if you can't, they can. Because they, you know, they have ways around these things. Frankly, they could probably repair the screen. It's not a terribly difficult thing to do. We'll take a break, come back with more of your calls, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you have a question about technology or computers. I'll try to translate geek speak into plain talk. Sometimes I fail. Sometimes I fail, but usually I can do it. Sometimes I lapse into geek speak. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, Frank is on the line from Monrovia, California. Hi, Frank.
Well, hello, Leo. I think we are related. We have the same last name.
Oh, are you the Frank Laporte?
Yeah, the dumb one.
You know, there is a genealogical group. The Laportes, because we are all related, at least all of us in Northern California, in Northern North America are related, however distantly. They have their reunions. My dad's gone in Montreal.
Interesting. I was born in Montreal. So,
yeah. In the 17th century, a woman came from France named Laporte, and she was the progenitor of all the Laportes in North America.
No kidding. Yeah. Wow.
Look up Laporte. D-I-T, Saint-Georges, S-T.
Saint-Georges.
Oh. Yeah, Laporte de Saint-Georges, and you will find Baxter Laporte, who runs the Laporte Genealogical Society, and he says we're all related.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh,
how about that?
I'm glad. Well, I have a big problem with my Windows 10. It has been driving me crazy.
You and me both, buddy. All right, what is it? Maybe it's just Laportes that have problems with Windows 10.
So, well, from what I've read on websites, it's a major problem. The Windows Live mail application is disappearing, reappearing in different forms or different places. And right now, I have completely lost it, but I have reloaded it, but due to problems with, I guess, passwords that I no longer have, I can no longer download my old email. But my question really is, why are the Windows mail applications disappearing or moving about? So this, I have had this four times happen to me, where it would disappear from the start button, then it would begin the applications, I would pin that to the taskbar, that would disappear, whether the system had updated or not. It just, crazy things happen, and I'm at my wit's end at this point.
Well, the chat room's telling me, and I did not know this, that Windows Live Mail is deprecated. They don't want that means it's cooked. It's done. Stick a fork in it.
I know for January 10th of next year,
yeah,
it will no longer be supported. Still,
nevertheless, that's not now. That's January.
Yeah.
Did it start when you went to Windows 10, or did it start when you got the anniversary update a couple of months ago?
Unrelated completely to that, it was fine. Then, lo and behold, without any updates, you know, those Tuesday updates and such, not
it just started happening.
It would just, and I would not mistakenly unpin it. I would not do things by mistake. I was very careful.
Well, now would be a good time, since in January you're going to have to anyway, to find another mail client. How about that?
Oh, so you do recommend then I go to...
Yeah, there's Live Mail was great. By the way, I loved it. It was based, it was kind of like the old Outlook Express. That's its roots, right? Which was the simple free email program that came with Windows. They Outlook Express was, I think, in through Windows 98, maybe through XP. Then they changed it to Windows Live Mail. Same idea.
Correct.
I always liked it because of its simplicity. But frankly, there are other email programs you can use. Microsoft would like you to go to Outlook. I don't like Outlook. Who's your provider? Where do you get
Verizon.
Your mail? Verizon. I think do they use Yahoo Mail or AOL Mail?
They
do.
They use
AOL, right?
My area, anyway.
Yeah. So I would get rid of that too. By the way,
yeah.
what we've been hearing about Yahoo is not good of late.
Well, actually, I'm Frontier now, so that's actually.
Oh, you're Frontier.
Yes.
And what do they use?
It's still Yahoo.
Still Yahoo. Yes. So what I'd love you to do, and I know this is a pain, but now's the time to do it, is to move to something like Google Mail, Gmail.
Google Mail.
Huh? Much better mail. Much better email server. Yahoo security has always been terrible. You know, all the passwords were leaked. Hundreds of millions of passwords were leaked.
Interesting.
So, it's an insecure system. We just learned that at the behest of the federal government, Yahoo put a rootkit, a serious malware application, in everybody's Yahoo mail so the government could find some malefactor. You know, whether it was illegal is not the question. In fact, it probably they had to, but they didn't fight it. And what they did, what they chose to do, was so bad for all email users on Yahoo. So let's get off Yahoo Mail. Let's just get off of it. And while you're doing that, let's get a better email client. Now, as I said, not crazy about Outlook. Microsoft's Outlook is really, first of all, it's not free. And it's really, I think, overly complex. I've used a variety of email clients. Never found the perfect one, frankly, for Windows. I guess Thunderbird probably would be. It's free. It'd be my first choice. The nice thing about Thunderbird, besides the fact it's free and open source, is it uses a standard email format. So if you didn't like Thunderbird, it would be an easy thing to do to move to something else.
Okay.
And it works great with Gmail. Truth is, when you're using Gmail, you don't really need a client. Because you could just use your web browser. And Gmail has a lot of the same capabilities that Live Mail had. In fact, all of them, but built into Gmail through the browser.
And I can transfer all of my old data to...
Yeah, what you do... Now, you still have the credentials to the Yahoo server, right?
I do, yes.
Yeah. So what you do is when you set up Gmail, you can do it today, you go into the settings, the POP IMAP email settings, and you can have it fetch your Yahoo mail. So periodically, it goes out, gets all the mail, just like... Live did, Windows Mail Live did, and gets it and puts it on the Gmail inbox.
and sorts it if you have sorts and all that stuff, does it all for you. So you can continue to use that Yahoo address if you want. I would slowly wean your correspondence off of it. But if you didn't want to do that, you could still use it, but you use the Gmail interface.
Okay, I will do that. That is great. I feel much better. I was about ready to go see my psychiatrist there. So.
Well, it's, you know, this is really a Band-Aid. I don't know what the problem is. You know, you may be reinstalling Live Mail would fix it or whatever. But since you're going to have to move in January anyway, and since the news this week about Yahoo, and I haven't talked about it today, but it is terrible news. So to the point where Verizon is now saying to Yahoo, hey, look, we said we'd pay $3 billion, but can you take $1 billion off because you guys stink? We don't want to pay so much for damaged goods. You're damaged goods now.
I agree.
So, wow, what a mess. What a mess this Yahoo thing has turned out to be. Worse, far worse than we thought.
The world of IT.
Thank you, Yahoo, for... You know what? I think they just dropped the ball. What's really sad is the Yahoo security folks, who actually are pretty smart and good, didn't know about this and were shocked. They thought, somebody's put malware on our servers. What's going on? And then the guys in the other department said, yeah, we wrote, that was us. We did that. The government told us we had to. That means everybody who had a Yahoo Mail account was being spied on by the U.S. government.
Interesting.
Thank you. Stop using it.
Okay, I will do that. I will follow your direction.
Okay, hey, thank you for the call.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I haven't brought this up, but this was just a shocking story. So initially what we thought is they had received one of these secret FISL notes, these national security letters approved by the FISL court, the federal secret court, that they should find, you know, go through all the mail and look for some specific signatures. But what we found out subsequently is the way they did it was reprehensible and not required by law. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Evan, Los Angeles, you're next. Hi, Evan.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Well, it's going good. How you doing?
Well, I don't know. I'm an owner of a Note 7.
Mm-mm.
I already actually turned mine in, got my replacement, and then I read some scary articles.
Yeah. Okay, so who's your carrier?
Phone on.
Who's your
Verizon?
Verizon has already said we'll take the replacement back. So you do have that option.
Okay.
And in fact, if you thought you might want to take advantage of that, I would do it now. Mostly because we don't know. There have been three incidents of the replacement reportedly, allegedly.
Right.
And that's really important. Allegedly of the replacement phones spontaneously combusting. That's never a good thing, but it's really a bad thing if these are the phones Samsung put back on the market saying, oh, no, they're safe now. Uh-oh. But remember, this is, you know, we don't know the details. And I want to hear from the Consumer Product Safety Commission. They're investigating that Southwest Airlines incident.
Well, I'll tell you, I've always been really suspicious when I found out that this happened, how quickly they were able to get these quote-unquote safe devices back on the market. Here's what's interesting in my personal experience is that I noticed that the power was draining much faster. I know that was a rumor that was going around. I was thinking about this. I doubt there was really any way they even had time to change the
maybe
hardware.
They didn't change the hardware. They just changed the software. Bad Samsung, because you know what we're seeing, and this is what really concerns me. It's not just they don't burst into flame just when they're charging. That's one kind of problem. That's an overcharging problem. That's happened before to other companies. Sony's done a recall. Dell's done a recall of laptops. So that's not unheard of. But what's scary is when they burst into flames when they're not being charged. That, to me, indicates that the protective layer around the lithium ion is being breached somehow. And that is devastatingly scary and would not be fixed by some sort of Futaka firmware update. You got to put in a new battery. So maybe you're right.
So, I mean, looking past this, I will be returning mine. I imagine
I think you should, just to be safe. Why take a chance?
Now, I was super excited to hear the keynote yesterday with all the amazing new hardware Google's launching.
Yeah.
I actually am one of the oddballs that has a Google Pixel laptop already.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
Great.
My favorite Chromebook.
I know.
And I bought the Pixel tablet. I'm crazy Google fanboy. So here's the deal. We don't have these yet. on paper, the Pixel looks great. It's pricey, but it's no more pricey than your Note 7.
Right.
You're not going to get the stylus. I don't know how important that is. It looks like you might get a camera that's as good or, according to DxOMark, even better. No OIS, no optical image stabilization. That's a minus. I've ordered the Pixel. You know, you could wait until they start coming out October 20th and listen to people's reviews. I'll tell you, my honest feedback these days is I'm starting to think that the only Android phone to have is the Google Android phone.
I mean, that's what it seems like, and Google's kind of pushing their competition that way.
Yeah. I mean, if I were Samsung, I'd be freaked out right now.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. Now, I don't know if this has been confirmed, but it doesn't seem like the Pixel is water-resistant.
No.
Maybe water-resistant, but not the same.
They didn't tout it that way. The Samsung, you could put it underwater for half an hour. Sigh.
And no wireless charging, it seems like.
And no wireless charging. Google doesn't do that. And no SD card either. Now, of course, Google's selling 128-gigabyte version, so that's probably a push.
That's an expensive phone.
But it's really, it's almost $1,000.
Yeah.
But then again, so was the Note. The Note was very, very expensive, too. So I've ordered a Pixel. I ordered the smaller one because I'm curious about battery life on the smaller one. But and, of course, my colleagues, Jason Howell, who does our Android show, he's ordered several. So we'll have reviews for you. Of course, all the magazines will, too, by the 20th. You could wait till then, but
go that route.
Here's the other reason to get a Pixel. Google Fi. This is Google's own carrier. You stop using Verizon, which I think is a good idea anyway. Fi uses T-Mobile, Sprint, and U.S. Cellular, or your Wi-Fi, whichever is better where you are at this moment. It hands off seamlessly, and it's great overseas. There's no additional charge for overseas data. It's the same price. It's just as if you were at home, and 20-cent phone calls and unlimited text. So it's a great travel phone. I really like my Google Fi service. It's inexpensive because you only pay for the data you use. You don't buy a bundle of data. You just pay for what you use, $10 a gigabyte. So if you don't use a lot of data, if you use a couple of – it's $20 plus $10 a gigabyte. If you use 20 gigabytes a month, that's $40 for the phone. It's a good deal. So,
that sounds intriguing.
But that requires a Pixel as well, or a Nexus phone as well. So,
okay. What are your thoughts on the wireless router that they're coming out at Google Home? I'm not sure the product name, but what are your thoughts on those two products?
You know, we'll have to try it. This seems to be a hot category, right?
Right.
They're copying the Eero's, Eero. I have the Eero's. I should say they are a sponsor. But I have the Eero's, and I love them. I tried them. Actually, the whole story is they sent me a set. There's three of them. They're expensive. I think the three is $500, something like that. And I tried them, and they didn't work well. And so I sent them back and said, hey, I don't like them. I'm not going to do any ads for you. That's for sure. And then they said, no, wait. You must have just got a bad one. They sent me another one. And I set it up, and I was blown away. In fact, my wife won't let me change. She won't let me try the Google product. She says, no, the Eero's are perfect. We're not changing. So, but the concept is instead of having just one central router and, you know, kind of getting weaker and weaker as you travel farther and farther away, you have more than one, as many as you want, but the pack, it comes with a three pack. And that way you get better coverage. They interact with each other. But I don't know the details of how Google's doing it. I'm very impressed with what Eero's doing. It, for instance, it does automatic firmware updates. That's something no other router does. And that's really, really important. It does it modifies its behavior depending on the kinds of devices you have. It's very smart. So I've been impressed by the Eero. The Google will be a little bit less expensive.
It makes sense. I mean, it's probably one of the least high-tech pieces of hardware left in our houses as we get more into the smart house space,
exactly.
I guess.
Exactly. And it's going to be a big issue with the Internet of Things. When everything's connected to the Internet, you're going to want a router that is smart enough to protect you.
Right.
So I can't say anything about the Google router because I haven't seen one. I've only seen, you know, what they claim, and who knows what that really means. But we'll get one and review it. I'll have to just force my wife to bite the bullet and put up with it.
Actually, I have two networks at home, and one of the reasons I do is so I can do that. So I'll let you know, but I have a feeling it's Google. You know, their OnHub router was not very impressive. I had one order. I decided not to use the OnHub. I use an Asus AC3200 router, which is excellent. And then that's on one network. On the other, I use the Eero, also excellent. But we'll let you know. You know, I'll be reviewing all of this new Google stuff, the Google Home, too, their Echo competitor. They announced a whole bunch of stuff.
Yep.
The main reason I'm thinking an Android phone should come from Google is that's the only phone that's guaranteed to get the Google security updates in a timely fashion. And that's important. So, yeah, maybe I would say definitely abandon the Note 7. There are other good choices. The LG V20 is just coming out. The G5 is excellent from LG. HTC makes some great ones. And I think the Google Pixel is going to be a very strong Android candidate. And the advantage you have when you get a Google Android phone is guaranteed security updates. And that's not to be sniffed at. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8880. Well, actually, I'm not going to give you the phone number because we're almost out of time. What? How did that happen? Every weekend right here, or weekday, depending on your local station, we are going to be back and talk more about tech and give you reviews of the latest stuff. All week long, the website techguylabs.com has information, answers to your questions, great search feature, and it's free. There's no sign up. I don't want your email address. Just you can use it to your heart's content. Tell your friends, techguylabs.com. And, of course, I do tech shows all week on our podcast network, TWIT. It stands for This Week in Tech, TWIT. And you can find those podcasts at TWIT.TV. So you don't have to be bereft in 10 minutes. I'm around all week. Donna Buena Park, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
What can I do for
you? I have a problem with my iPad and my iPhone.
Uh-oh.
After iOS 10.
Yeah, what happened?
I am a very enthusiastic user of the text replacement feature.
Oh, I love that too. Yeah, because I type OMW and it fills in on my way.
Yes.
Love that.
Well, that's all I have now.
It knew you wanted that one. You mean it erased all of you? How many did you have?
Oh, dozens.
And it erased them all.
Of carefully crafted wisdom.
Oh, shame on you, Apple. Wait a minute. Maybe it's done that to me, too. Golly, that would not be good behavior.
No, and it's not having, you know, checked. It's not just me. Lots of people have it. Some people have been able to fix it. The wonderful people at Apple support spent over an hour with me on the phone.
Well, what did they suggest? I mean, it sounds like it didn't get copied over. Did you get a new phone or no? You just took your original phone and updated the software.
It's my 5S.
Yeah. Do you have a backup?
Well...
Like when you connect it to do you connect it via cable anytime to iTunes?
No.
No. Do you use the iCloud backup?
Yes.
So did you tell them that you had an iCloud backup? Because that would be the way to get it back. It should still be in your iCloud backup.
That's what they think too, but they can't get it out.
What? Oh, you know what happened? It wiped it out. I bet this would happen. It wiped it out, and then it backed it up. I bet that's what happened.
That's not good.
So I'm going to tell you for future, you should also be making direct backups to your computer. You know, you get the USB cable, and you plug it into your computer, and iTunes, when you do that, will launch and back it up. And the reason you do that is it keeps as many as you want, so you could go back. If it did this, see, the iCloud backup, there's only one copy, right? It's the most recent one. But on the iTunes backup, you could go back to previous versions.
Well, I will do that.
Yeah, but it's too late now for this particular time. But in future,
Wow. So other does this happen to other people? They've lost their all their text expansions?
Yes, I just looked it up on Googled it in Safari. And yeah, some people get it back by flipping the iCloud drive off and on.
Oh.
But that didn't work for me.
Oh, I wonder why that would work.
No idea. I guess it would force a sync or something.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know of any way to get it back except restoring from a good backup, and you've tried that already. Donna, I think you're going to be doing some typing.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Well, I have another question.
Sure.
Kangaroo.
Well, you too. Kangaroo, what about it? What is it?
You know about it because you discussed it months ago.
Oh, that computer, that little Windows computer?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, my big computer died, and it was too old to really rehab.
Yeah, the Kangaroo's a $90 portable, because it's got a battery in it, Windows PC.
It's marvelous.
Did you buy one?
I did.
And you connect it to it? You had a monitor lying around, a keyboard and a mouse. You connect it, and now you got Windows. It's not the fastest computer ever.
I'm tickled. No, but it's fine.
But it's cheap.
With it.
Well, that's good to know.
But the $96 version doesn't have a VGA out.
Yeah, they've got a new. That when they first came out with it, this comes from the company that makes those PowerPoint projectors, InFocus. You can find out more at kangaroo.cc, and they released a second, more powerful edition, which is, frankly, what I'd recommend for any. But when I bought it, they only had the one you have.
Me too.
Yeah.
And I heard that they were coming out with a new dock.
Interesting.
That would take care of that problem.
Yes, that would solve it.
They won't sell the dock separate.
What?
It only comes with the Pro.
That's what you get for $90, right? Oh, that's a bummer. That's a bummer. So you don't have a monitor? Well, you must have something you're hooking it up to. By the way, it has a built-in fingerprint reader. I mean,
I have it hooked up to a giant HDMI.
Yeah, it's got HDMI. Yeah.
But it's not very
TV's not good because they're not designed for computing. You can get a cheap monitor now, an $80 monitor that'll do HDMI. Every monitor out now does HDMI. So you should be able to get a sub-$100 monitor that would be just fine for that. Now, admittedly, that's as much as it cost for the Kangaroo, but...
Yes. Okay. Well, I was looking for that recommendation for one of those, and I was thinking that there must be some sort of a device that would convert HDMI to VGA. I found such a device, but Kangaroo says
it's not the ideal way. So HDMI is digital and VGA is not. So it actually has to do a conversion inside that box, a digital to analog conversion, and that's going to lower the quality. So, you know, what is interesting, if you had an iPad, you can use an iPad as a monitor. Do you have an iPad?
I do.
Oh, you know that you can use an iPad with that.
I have an iPad mini.
Yeah, it's too small, yeah.
It's kind of, well...
Yeah, you'd be better. In fact, it'd even be cheaper to buy a monitor with an HDMI port.
All right, a recommendation?
Let me ask the chat room. Who makes good but inexpensive, that's the key, inexpensive monitors? You don't need to get a big one. You probably get 21-inch would be fine.
Exactly.
I just don't know who makes cheap monitors. I get all my monitors from Dell. I think Dell makes less expensive, smaller monitors. Marsworm is saying Dell. Ken Heat in our chat room says Dynex, D-Y-N-E-X. We'll put these all at techguylabs.com so you don't have to write everything down. In fact, what we'll do is we'll collect a few from the chat room and put them in there. Acer. You know, there's places to get cheap monitors. Monitors are cheap now. Oh, of course, Sandman says Monoprice. Of course. I'm using a Monoprice monitor. I love Monoprice. They're low-cost, good quality. Monoprice. Oh, also AOC. They make USB monitors, too, that are very good. AOC is very good.
and those are cheap. Hisense, the Chinese company, we'll find a fun bunch of them. We'll put them all in the show notes. Hey, thanks for the call, Donna, and kangaroo to you, too. Well, I'm out of time. I thank you all for being here. I hope you had a great time today. Come back next time. We'll talk more about tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The website, techguylabs.com. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.